Well, it's been a while. Welcome. Welcome back to Waffle Free Storytelling. It's Tina Constant here, and nothing has changed. The jibber jabber is at the end. So we're jumping right into this week's story, which is called The Clockmaker and Corelli. Now, Brominen, he was a clockmaker. He spent half of his days building new clocks and the other half dusting and maintaining the existing ones. Over the years, Brominen's home had grown from a small cottage to a tall and wide and deep and long mansion of a building, all to house his growing collection. Every room, every passageway, every nook and cranny housed a clock. Big ones, small ones, some with tiny, delicate hands, others with massive, booming pendulums. The whole house ticked and topped and rumbled with the moving parts of his magnificent timepieces. Nothing has more value than time. He would say that over and over again, and nobody would argue his point. Now, part of Brominen's routine from the very beginning was to make his way out of his house once a week, down the mountainside, through the forest, and into the town for market day. On these trips, he never spoke to anybody. He didn't even look at anyone. He didn't so much as pause for a mug of tea. He kept his jacket buttoned tight and his hat down, and he focused on finding the bits and pieces he needed to build new clocks. He had been like this for as long as anyone knew, so much so that no one expected anything else from him. And that suited Brominen fine. Until one day, a child seemed to forget the unspoken agreement between Brominen and the village, and she followed him home. In her hands, she had an old wind-up clock that her grandmother had given her days before she had died. The clock had worked perfectly, the child said, following Brominen through the woods. And then suddenly it didn't. And she begged Brominen to fix it. Brominen tried to ignore her. Then he told her to go home and then to leave him alone. But Corelli, because, well, that was her name, was relentless. She forced her way into Brominen's home, and no matter what he said and what he did, she wouldn't leave. He tried to build his next clock, but she insisted on picking things up and putting down his tools and then turning springs and nuts and bolts into tea parties. Then she moved things and disrupted things, and she chatted and natted about her grandmother, her dog, the neighbor's goose, her brother. And then finally she said, "It's dark outside. I can't go home now. I will stay the night while you fix my clock." And so, Brominen relented. "Fine," he said. "I will fix your little clock on the condition that you go into the kitchen and you leave me alone to work." Well, no sooner had Brominen settled down to see what was wrong with his silly, tiny little wind-up device than Corelli said, "I'm hungry." Now, here's the thing. Brominen had never had anyone in his house, so as you can imagine, he only had one plate and one bowl and one spoon and knife and fork and one pot. "You can wait until you're home," he grumbled, and he took the little clock apart. But, you know, Corelli, she was relentless. She unpacked his pantry and stood on chairs and moved things and changed things. And it was finally when she balanced a pile of books on a three-legged stool so she could reach up to light the flame on the stove that Brominen finally relented. "Fine," he said. "I will cook you something." Knocking pots and pans and plates together, Brominen put bread and cheese on the table. He made soup, and using the only pot he had, he served the soup to Corelli. No sooner had she sat down than she said, "I want you to eat with me, like friends do." By now, Brominen had come to the end of his tether. "I can't do it," he said. "I don't have the time. I have things and work to do." And he stomped and he stormed around the house, pointing to all the clocks he had to maintain, all the fixing and dusting and repairing and building. And when Corelli just didn't seem to realize how much he really had to do and how busy he really was, he finally said, Besides, I only have one bowl, so you eat your soup and go to sleep. I will have your clock fixed by morning. And Romanin slammed the door shut to his workshop and got to work. The moment Romanin shut the door on his workshop, Corelli got to work too. While Romanin cursed and grumbled while he fixed the little clock, Corelli hummed and sang as she solved the one problem she knew Romanin didn't even seem to realize he had. And so the night passed. When the sun came up, Romanin looked up from his workshop and he admired the little clock. He couldn't help but smile. On the surface, it had been this silly little wooden contraption that did nothing but mark the passage of time in a real clumsy little tick-tock way. But when he dug into it, he realized the mechanism was intricate and fine, detailed and quite exquisite in its complexity. With great care, he put a new face on the little clock. Then he stretched an ache out of his back and he stood when there was a knock on the door. It was Corelli's parents. As you can imagine, they were a little worried that their daughter had been gone all night, but before Romanin could say anything, there was a call from the kitchen. "Breakfast is ready," Corelli said. And it was then that Romanin noticed two things. First was the smell of fresh baked bread. Second was a different sound in the house. The ticking and the talking of his clocks was different. Something was wrong. Something was missing. He stormed into the kitchen, hardly able to breathe or to think, dreading even to imagine. Inside the kitchen, the fire was glowing and breakfast was piled high. On the table, there was not one plate. There were four. Not one knife and fork and spoon, but there was four of each. Romanin's and three more. Now, an artist himself, Romanin didn't deny the craftsmanship was quite unique and quite magnificent. The lines were smooth and the surfaces shone and glistened in the dawn light. It was only when Romanin looked closely that he saw how the streaks of gold and brass and copper and silver blended together. He looked around his kitchen and he saw what he feared most. Three clocks were missing, three of his most precious timepieces. They had been fine clocks, sturdy clocks, reliable clocks. Now the casings fueled the fire and the inner workings had been melted and reshaped into bowls and knives and forks. Not paying any attention to Bromenin's rising panic, Corelli's parents hugged their child, and as though this was their own home, they sat and they filled those bowls and they ate and then invited Romanin to join them. Like a guest in his own house, Romanin could do nothing but sit. He would have said something, but just at that moment, Corelli's tiny clock chimed on the hour. And as though that little clock was a conductor of a vast orchestra, all the other clocks through the entire house chimed and banged and rang out. The house shook and rumbled with the noise, and Corelli laughed. "You fixed my clock," she said. The more Corelli danced around the room in her joy, the more her parents laughed at the oddness of it all. And like Romanin was seeing himself for the first time in the face of this child, he took a breath. He picked up the bowl and he admired the beauty of it. And then he filled it and he ate like this was the first meal he had had in years. His next visit into town was different. This time he didn't buy nuts and bolts and springs and gadgets. This time he filled his bags with flour and eggs and milk and sausages and fruit and fish and honey. "Time I had people round for dinner," he said to everyone he met. Now, maybe because they were curious, no one knows, but everyone in the village took that as an invitation and arrived at Bremenin's house in time for supper. They all knew what he liked most. So they didn't bring flowers. Instead, they bought bits and bobs of brass and steel and copper and springs and nuts and bolts. And Bremennen was delighted. Put it all in the furnace, he said. And while Bremennen made bread and vast pots of stew, Corelli broke up the clocks and used the inner workings to forge bowls enough for everyone. Nothing more valuable than who you spend time with, Bremennen said, and no one argued his point. When all was said and done, the only clock that remained was the one Corelli had asked Bremennen to repair. It sat on the mantel, ticking away, chiming on the hour. Look at that, Bremennen said. It's time for music, don't you think? And so it was from that day on. Bremennen's great house, with its vast halls and staircases, became the place that people gathered to mark all of their great occasions, even if it was just to get together. Because that's what friends do. Hey, it's good to be back. Yeah, we took a little pause coming into over Christmas and the New Year, and hey, good to see you again. So, what have you been doing? How's your week been? How's your day been? How are you spending your time? How are you spending your time? That's my question for you today. There's spending time, and then it's who you spend your time with. So, have a good one, as always. Oh my goodness, just go hug the people you love. And have a beautiful, beautiful, splendid day. As always, drop round to www.tinaconstant.com. That is constant with a K. And join the fireside. Have a wee leap around the site. And yeah, I'll see you there. All right, bye-bye now.